Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
The rise in challenges to books in school and public libraries has grown rapidly in recent years. Efforts to censor certain topics in reading material isn't new. Attempts have appeared periodically throughout history, but the American Library Association saw a 70% increase in book ban requests in 2022. We'll discuss what's driving the latest spike in demands for book removals and who should decide today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
What gives you strength? Strength comes from teaching the Alaskan way of life, getting wood, fishing, hunting, helping people in the community, and being an example for the next generation. If you have forgotten your strength, remember, there's hope, there's joy, there's love, there's peace everywhere. Share what gives you strength at recoveralaska.org/share-your-strength. This message sponsored by Recover Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Librarians in schools across the country are facing challenges to books that go beyond a request to remove, and some are quitting after being threatened or they feel forced out. A library worker in Texas quit after people showed up at a library board meeting armed and accusatory about a book that wasn't on the shelves there. Another middle school librarian in Louisiana filed a complaint after a Facebook group labeled her a criminal and pedophile. And voters in a Michigan community backed deep cuts to the local library over objections to LGBTQ-themed books. The list goes on, and these accounts are from 2022. There is more organization around book ban requests on local and national levels currently. So what's going on? Who is organizing these book protests, and who is affected when books are not available? Here to help us better understand the concerns and how librarians are working to manage them is Dave Berry. Dave is the library director for the Homer Public Library. Also in the studio with me today is Janelle Gagnon. Janelle is a librarian who has worked in California, Oregon, and in Alaska. She is the former librarian for the Mat-Su Borough School District, past president of Friends of the Palmer Public Library, and is a former member of the Mat-Su Library Board. Welcome, both of you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
You can also join us, Alaskans. Have you expressed concern about books in your local library? Who do you think should make the decisions about what books are in the stacks at public libraries and at school libraries? Do you think some titles and authors should be censored? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 907-550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Before we discuss recent debates over books in Alaska, talk about what you've seen in your career in this regard and how the challenges have changed over the years. Janelle, you've worked, as we noted, in other states. Were books targeted at libraries where you worked in Oregon and California?
Well, I think books have been challenged throughout the ages. That's nothing new. And I also don't think that it's anything especially new that libraries, both public and school libraries, have policies in place to handle challenges. I didn't experience challenges so much while I was in California. I worked as the librarian at the County Office of Education in Humboldt County, and so was there as a resource for school library techs mostly. But in Oregon, I did experience two challenges, Would you like to me
sure.
to flesh out that experience? Okay. So I started as a school librarian at a high school in Oregon in 1998. And there was a parent of a freshman who objected to a book that was in the library in which I worked, and expressed that concern to the principal, who just arbitrarily pulled that book off the shelf. And I was pretty green at the time, young, new to the profession, and didn't feel like I could challenge the principal at that time, even though I knew that there was a clear board policy in place that should have been followed and wasn't being followed. And ultimately didn't end up returning to that job. I did get hired later to be the school librarian for an elementary school that was being built, and so was able to do everything to cultivate a collection and a space in that library. I purchased upwards of 18,000 books, but also all the tables, bookshelves, pencils, everything. There happened to be a local award. It was called the Young Writers Choice Award, which was a longstanding tradition in the Pacific Northwest, where students of certain age categories were given a select group of books to read and then vote on which book they thought deserved the highest award. And one of the books in that set was challenged by a parent. I had the very fortunate opportunity to experience what it's like when a book does get challenged, and it runs the entire course through the proper channels according to board policy. And ultimately, the book was retained. But I think even if it hadn't been, even though that was a harrowing experience at the time, it was very gratifying to see that process play out.
In the proper way.
In the proper way, exactly.
So, Dave, talk about your experience in this regard, and let's talk before the petition that circulated in Homer a year ago. I do want to talk about that, but let's talk before that time what your experience has been as far as books being challenged.
Sure. I've worked in a whole series of libraries before I came here to Homer, both academic and public. And when you're in library school studying for the master's degree, we spend a whole lot of time discussing intellectual freedom and the proper response to book challenges. But it's not something that I ever really encountered very much. It typically came up only during election years. I can remember in 2008, at one point we had Barack Obama's autobiography on the shelves. We did not yet have John McCain's autobiography because it hadn't been published at that point. And we did have a patron who was very angry about this lack of balance in the collection. And we had to say, well, we've placed it on order. If you'd like us to hold it for you when it comes in, just give us your library card number, we will. But that was really pretty much the only time. And then I moved to Homer in 2019. And since then, there have been a few challenges in Homer aside from the petition. I don't know if you're familiar with a work called Battle Bunny, which is a children's picture book. It's kind of a clever book. It's designed as a picture book, but it's a picture book where much of the text has been crossed out and written over by a child who wants to change the nature of the story. So that instead of being this sweet little story about a bunny who's having a birthday party, it becomes this story about Battle Bunny fighting robots and stuff like that. And we did have a parent who said, well, there's nothing wrong with the book, but it probably shouldn't be in the picture section because it's too sophisticated for very young readers. And after reviewing that with the children's staff, we agreed and we actually put it into the juvenile early reader section just as a more appropriate age sophistication level of reading. But generally speaking, up until last year, I would have said, book challenges are something that is more theoretical than practical. I've changed my mind in the last year or so.
Well, let's talk about what happened about a year ago, a petition in Homer that was circulated, 500 signatures asked to remove all LGBTQ themed titles from the children and young adult collections. Tell us about that process, Dave, and what ultimately happened.
The petition started circulating in about July of 2002. And yes, as you say, it garnered about 500 signatures. It was It was an interesting experience for the community as a whole, because when the petition was presented to me as the library director, I thanked them for their interest in the collection and told them that we felt that the materials belonged where they were. And as they expected, they appealed that decision to the Library Advisory Board. So the board had to have two public hearings on the subject, and there was hours upon hours of public testimony. Hundreds of comments from the community came in. And at the end of that, in February of this year, the board voted to leave the materials where they were. But I think that the process was really cathartic for the community as a whole. At one point, there was a counter petition going around demanding that the library leave the books in their positions, and that got about 1,000 signatures. But the chance for everybody to hear what everybody else had to say really gave the community serious input and investment in the library as an institution. So I think it was rewarding. I think it was actually a valuable experience in the long run.
Well, that's interesting to hear you characterize it that way. Have you found since that time, since those meetings and all the hours of testimony, are people still coming to the library in the same numbers? Are the people who were upset about titles, have they sort of moved on and accepted that those titles are staying? And are they still availing themselves of the services of the library?
Yes, actually, our gate count is on track to be a record this year. We're having more people come in than we've ever had before. Our story times are full. I think that, you know, people had the chance to air their beliefs, and we do continue to take patron recommendations from all across the whole political spectrum. So anybody who is invested in the library and wants it to be the best library possible, we are happy to have them on board.
All right. So it sounds like democracy in action, people bringing their concerns forward and being heard. If you are just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. And today we're talking about book challenges, book ban attempts, and efforts at taking certain books off of shelves in school libraries and public libraries. And we're talking with librarians Dave Berry, who is the director of the Homer Public Library, and Janelle Gagnon is a former librarian with the Mat-Su Borough School District. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Janelle, the book challenges in the Mat-Su, 56 books were given to the Borough School District's Library Citizens Advisory Council. The group meets monthly. And reporting by Alaska Public Media notes, the group says they may not be able to review all the challenge books by the committee's expiration date next summer. What can you tell us about these challenges and the citizen process?
Well, I hesitate to try to speak too authoritatively about this committee, the Library Citizens Advisory Committee, because I'm not involved myself, and I'm watching it play out as a citizen myself, almost like a spectator, as a parent and a former educator. But I think despite all of the rancor and vitriol that has been expressed in school board meetings regarding book titles, my understanding in listening to some of these committee meetings and then hearing commentary done on the local public radio about that after is that the process is playing out. There is still the question on the table of how that list of 56 books was derived, where that came from, and there doesn't seem to be a clear answer about that, as far as I understand it at this point. So I think that is worth noting and still needs to be pursued.
But so the list didn't come from the advisory committee itself?
No, the advisory committee was formulated as a response to the list.
Okay.
And the list was longer. It was, I can't give you an exact number, but it was 70 plus. And what was determined upon research was that a number of those titles didn't even exist on the shelves of the school libraries within the school district. So that group is taking a look at four titles a month, and that's a it's a laudable goal. A lot of people can't finish 4 books in 1 month, in addition to all the other life things that we have to attend to. But it sounds like it's been a very democratic and civil process up to this point. So that, I think, is good. And I would concur with Dave that while I may not always agree with some of the arguments that have been put forth, particularly about a large swath of books being questioned arbitrarily as opposed to one book specifically, I think it is good that people are desiring to be a part of that process and are feeling like they have a place where their voice can be heard. And I think challenges prior to recently, while they existed, they were very rare, and they were, at least at the school library level, an opportunity for a parent who is maybe specifically concerned, once going through the conversation with the librarian or the teacher, and then the next step was always the principal, were able to see that their concerns were specifically about their child, not necessarily all people's children. And so an action plan could be put in place so that that parent could feel more comfortable about their child continuing to use the library.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Dave, you mentioned a couple of times in a previous interview and talked a little about this just now, that the library is the face of government in communities. And I wonder if most people think of their libraries in this way. What does it mean to you and to how you think about what kind of reading material you should feature? You said there's a certain reevaluation of government services and libraries are included. What are you hearing from colleagues about this?
Well, yes, I absolutely believe that libraries are certainly the face of local government in particular. It's the heart of the community. And the library is the place that people go for access to social services, for help with job hunting, for education, for children's programs, all of it. And I think that a lot of the tension that we've seen nationwide right now is driven by people reevaluating what their own communities want to be. And if you are going to define your community, the way you define it, the way you present it to the world, is often through the public library. So this is something that's happening nationwide. It's particularly happening here in Alaska because Alaska, all government is local government in Alaska. People really know their own representatives and invest themselves very heavily in their own community management. I think I've heard this from other directors around the state. I think this is pretty much a universal experience. Obviously, events in Mat-Su have made it clear that people feel very, very strongly about what should be on the shelves. And they feel this way because they want to define what their community should be and not leave that decision to others.
Well, let's talk about what goes into becoming a librarian. And then we'll talk more about who should be reviewing titles. Janelle, your education, you got a master's degree in the 90s. You also needed a library license and a classroom license. What's involved in that type of licensing and education?
Yeah, and that has changed so much since I was getting my education. But back in the mid to late 90s, you're right, I, along with a cohort of pre-service teachers whose intention was to teach in the classroom, I was the sole person who was also pursuing a library degree. And at that time in Oregon, to work in a school library, I had to have a classroom teaching license. I had to have a library teaching license. And then I was required to finish the extra 15 credits needed to get my master's degree. That was recommended and encouraged to my cohorts who were going into the classroom, but not required. So the standards were pretty stringent. And it was really important, I believe, for school librarians to have that classroom teaching license because so much of what you're doing is supporting the curricula of the school. You're supporting the work and the outcomes of classroom instruction and then providing additional materials for students to dive deeper should they desire to do so. That's just one facet of a school library. That's changed since. And when I worked in California, it was radically different in that my position as a part-time county librarian at the Humboldt County Office of Education was what allowed our secondary schools in the county to remain accredited, even though they did not have a librarian in their library.
And how are librarians held to the same standard today for education and what's needed to?
Possibly in other parts of the country. As I know it and understand it, in at least the Matsu Borough School District, many of our school libraries are staffed with classroom teachers, but don't necessarily have that additional training in libraries specifically.
For both of you, do you think community members who are upset with certain books care about how well educated the local librarian is? Do you think your training and resources, the resources that are available to vet books, does that matter to people who are upset about certain titles? What have you heard in that regard, if you have?
Well, in my experience, I think it's difficult when you're the sole person in a school doing the work that you do. And I would venture to say that other specialists who are the only person in that that specialty in that area of the curricula, it's always difficult for the others around you if they have a team that do the same thing. It's hard for them to understand what you do. So even harder, I would imagine, for community members to understand that. But going through that library training, I think, is critical for so many reasons. But when it comes to cultivating a collection, there's a lot of time spent on what sorts of tools. They're called selection tools or review sources. They're professional journals where materials that you might purchase for your school library, and I believe public libraries do this as well, you are looking through a journal that has included book titles that have been vetted by numerous professionals.
Dave, your experience in that regard?
I would agree. I think that, you know, training in libraries is vitally important. It's been valuable to me in my career. Library work has gotten more and more complex over time. And I think probably many members of the general public don't quite realize just how complicated it is on a daily basis. But when it comes to reviewing materials and choosing materials for the collection, a lot of that is based on experience. It's based on knowing your community. It's based on knowing your collection. So if you have a collection that is focused on Alaskana, on books by Alaskans or about Alaska, for example, you have to know where the gaps are. What can you fill in? What do you need to fill in? And all of that is based on a sense of figuring out what your library needs to do to best serve its consumers, which is mainly based on something that you gain over time, experience.
Does it, you mentioned, Janelle, that you purchased, I think, 18,000 books, mm-hmm. you said. Does it make sense to have some community groups of sort of like early readers? Because it seems like an impossible task to be able to really thoroughly read all the books that you want to bring into a collection. So is there room for having some sort of citizen advisory councils as long as people understand what the goal is for that particular library as far as collections and other things? Does that make sense? Can that work?
I think theoretically that's a nice idea, and in practice could also be helpful and efficacious. But I think what a citizen advisory committee can't possibly understand, if they have not had the training themselves, is to have that broad but also intricate understanding of not just one curriculum, one curricular area, but the curricula. And what I felt like when I was developing the curriculum for that brand new school was that I had a large group of colleagues with a variety of experiences and length of time in school libraries that I could refer to, but also these tools are very that a librarian uses, and what I used in that case, they were catalogs that were cultivated based on a wide number of elementary school libraries. What was standard for those collections, and with each title, it came with what review source had reviewed that book and why they felt like that title belonged. Mm.
So there is a thorough vetting happening of these books.
There is.
Might not just be always locally. Dave, your thoughts about this is, do you see room for citizen advisory committees, or do you think it should stay with people who are trained specifically for that work? I guess it would, you know, an analogy would be that would citizen advisors tell doctors what to prescribe. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I would say, speaking as a public librarian, that we already have a citizens advisory committee. It's the entire community. We take patron recommendations every single day. I mean, there are always calls. There are always slips of paper being dropped into the book drop saying, please purchase this book. We evaluate all of those the same way that we would evaluate a recommendation coming from a review source or from another member of staff. We look at it and say, does it fit our collection? Does it fit our needs? What's the price? All the criteria that go into selecting materials apply to recommendations as much as they would to just regular choices. As far as handing the responsibility for developing the collection to an outside source, I think that would be unwise. The library staff, as I say, have a lot of experience and spend a lot of time considering and thinking what is the best collection we can build. And if you don't spend your full-time job doing that, you're just not going to do it as well. That's just a fact of life.
Dave, your policy at the Homer Public Library says it's the parent's job to decide what their child reads. You make materials available. Seems simple, but in application, how does that work? If a 13-year-old comes in alone for a book, what's the process for letting them check a book out?
Well, a 13-year-old could only get a library card with a parent's permission. So if you are concerned about what your child might be reading, you can say, I'm going to get a card for myself, and we're going to check out all of the family's materials on that card. That's definitely an option. It is a parent's responsibility to supervise their own child's reading. We as library staff don't want to make that decision for families. We don't want to be in that position. We view it as our responsibility to make a wide array of materials available to all readers of all types, and it's up to the readers themselves or their parents and guardians to choose what they want out of the collection.
Janelle, what's the process been like in libraries where you've worked? Have you worked to ensure material that young people check out is age appropriate?
Well, absolutely. There are standards in place and guidelines for, you know, what would be in an elementary school library versus a middle and then a high school library. But those lines get blurred a little bit, of course, because you might have, for example, a kindergartner who's reading at a third or fourth grade level. You might conversely have a junior in high school who's reading at a fifth grade level. Yeah. And so there is, I suppose, the presumption, or has been in the past, that parents are monitoring what their children are checking out and reading. Maybe that's not a wise presumption to make, but it's not as if there aren't checks and balances, because classroom teachers are observing, especially at the elementary school level, what children are checking out. The librarian is, if there's an aide that's helping with the checkout process. So usually, again, at that elementary school level especially, you're having two or three adults who have observed the selection by that child before it actually gets checked out. And so there might be some guidance that's administered at that point.
All right. Thank you. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, as Talk of Alaska continues, we will be talking more about book challenges in Alaska and the rise in challenged books as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quality childcare creates futures for families, children, and the state's economy. When children are safe, engaged, and learning, parents can work and everyone has a better outcome. THREAD has resources to support your family in their childcare search. Knowing what to look for in a licensed facility is important for the safety of your children. THREAD also offers parenting resources and support. To learn more about quality childcare in Alaska, visit threadalaska.org. This message sponsored by THREAD.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing challenges to books in libraries, both public libraries and school libraries. In the studio with me today is Janelle Gagnon, a former librarian with the Mat-Su Borough School District. And on the phone from Homer is Dave Berry, who is the director of the Homer Public Library. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. There are groups challenging subjects rather than specific works. Talk about what you're seeing in this regard and what are the most challenged subjects. Dave, you want to start us off?
Well, the rise of group challenges to whole subject fields is kind of a new thing. I mean, our challenge process in the past was always designed around a single patron with one or two titles that they were concerned about. But the subjects that are getting challenged most often in libraries are the same subjects you hear about on the news all the time. I mean, they're LGBT questions, transgenderism materials, questions about parents' rights to supervise their own children's education, racial issues of all kinds. Ever since Black Lives Matter, there's been a lot of discussion about how to present racial issues, especially in young adult materials. So those are the subjects that are roiling the public mind right now.
Janelle,
I would just concur with that seems to be the target. And again, just the unusual nature of large numbers of titles, that there's no indication that all of those titles have been read in their entirety and taken or examined in their entirety, if at all, before being challenged.
Well, let's talk about one of the groups. A video released by the organization Moms for Liberty that the group started in Florida, and it states that it has at least 30 chapters in 18 states with 15,000 members. There's a chapter in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. On the website, it says, Moms for Liberty, Matanuska-Susitna Borough is dedicated to the survival of America by unifying, educating, and empowering parents to defend their parental rights at all levels of government. Here's a clip from a collection of member comments on the national organization's website.
Our network of chapters is like an early warning system. It connects parents all over the country, allowing them to be aware of issues often before they take a foothold in education. It grows stronger every day, and the larger it grows, the better it works. When we begin to see multiple chapters in every state in the country, that's when we'll see the tide change in America. I'm blessed every day to talk to women who are joining our organization because they understand that what is taught in America steers the future of America. And that is what we're striving for as an organization, is unified, informed, empowered parents who together will ensure the survival of our country.
I wholeheartedly agree. What is taught in America steers the future. But who decides what that looks like and whose narrative and lens on history should be taught? It seems like, is that sort of like the crux of the issue, is who gets to make that decision, Janelle?
Yes, and I love the idea of unified and informed and educated, but I think in terms of parental rights, I think the irony is that in removing selections from the bookshelves of libraries, whether they're school libraries or public libraries, you are thereby removing the rights of other parents to make those decisions for themselves and for their children. So that makes it harder to get behind. I think that there are other strategies, other ways that parents who have concerns about what their children are learning, or what they are reading, that can be implemented so that those parents' rights are respected and valued, but not removing the rights or infringing upon the rights of other parents.
Dave, your thoughts about the Moms for Liberty group and the comments of this particular member, and then talk about what is possible. You have said that in the public library, if parents don't want their child to have a card, they will make sure they keep the family card to monitor what's being checked out and approve of that. First, Dave, reflect on that a little bit, and then we'll talk about school libraries.
Sure. A lot of the debate that's going on right now is really about social policy. It's about what America should do nationwide and what individual communities should do to manage their own young people and to manage their own societies. There's a sense that libraries are a tool for making social policy, or a tool for steering society. And one thing I have emphasized over and over again is that in the public library, we do not make policy. That's explicitly not our job. What we do is provide the resources for the community as a whole to guide itself. I think the big uproar at the moment is driven by a lot of, emotional unrest. We've just been through a global pandemic. We've been through waves of book challenges. There's unrest in the United States. There's unrest overseas. And just look at the events of this past weekend in the Middle East. And in the midst of all of this, people are wanting to take back some control over what their own neighborhoods are turning into. And they view the library as a tool for doing that. I view it as my responsibility as a librarian to ensure that no single group can dictate what anyone else gets to read. As I said, as a parent, you have the right to control your own family's card, and that goes for other families as well. We supply materials to all kinds of different families and different communities that have different priorities.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation about books that are being challenged in both public and school libraries, and your thoughts about, are there titles that you think should not be on certain shelves and why? 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can email talk@alaskapublic.org. So in school libraries, could a parent go to the library and say, look, I want to make sure my child does not check out these certain books, and sort of have their own banned book list?
Absolutely. And I think that if a parent especially proactively reached out to any school librarian and developed a relationship with that librarian, by all means, there definitely could be a way of monitoring what anyone's specific child was reading. And I believe that that is currently in the works in the MATSU, that when parents register their children, they're allowed to select a button that says that I would like to be notified every time my child checks out a book. My understanding is that the most recent numbers for that are that approximately 25% of parents have elected to do that, 75% have not. Unfortunately, that software hasn't been initiated into the system yet, so that on the receiving end, librarians can get that notification from those parents and then start to implement a strategy by which they can honor that. So yes, absolutely. I think, you know, public libraries and school libraries are similar in many ways, but public libraries are definitely going to have materials that school libraries don't have, particularly because they are serving a demographic that doesn't necessarily exist in the school. And a school library is, you know, at its, you know, core, there to support the curricula. That is its main goal, is to support the curricula. So, you know, at the same time, you know, parents aren't typically in the school building during the school day. And so I can imagine for some parents, there feels like this sort of loss of control because children are allowed to go into the library and not be accompanied by their parents. So that might be the case at public libraries as well. But hopefully I answered that question.
Well, and I want to, you know, one of, as we noted, this audio clip that we played was from the Moms for Liberty website. And another commenter on this video says, it's an important time to be an advocate for truth and a warrior for liberty. Truth, of course, is critical, but can also be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So how do we teach the truth of our history when some Americans don't want to look at its more unsavory moments? Do you see, especially for you, Dave, in the public library setting, is that a critical piece of what the library offers? Is sometimes very uncomfortable material about the truth of our history?
Absolutely. We have a wide variety of perspectives, and Americans historically don't agree on everything, which is a good thing. If you want Harold Zinn's history, we have that. If you want books that take a completely divergent viewpoint, we have those as well. The key difference, and you just mentioned this, Janelle, is that public libraries don't have a curriculum. I mean, we very explicitly leave it up to the community, to individual citizens, to think for themselves and do their own reading. If you need help with finding materials, we're happy to do that, but we're not going to tell you what to think.
So from either side, there's another Florida-based group that was started by a teacher to buy books that are challenged. The group is called the Foundation 451. It's named after Fahrenheit 451, a Ray Bradbury novel about book burning. They've raised more than $35,000. Book donations are pouring into the organization. Have you or do you know of organized supporters of that on that side of the issue of open access to reading materials? Is that happening in Alaska as well?
Well, I'm thinking back just a few years ago when some challenges to book titles started happening in the Matsu, at least during my tenure living there. And it was four or five titles, and they were specifically linked to the curriculum and were being challenged. And the backlash of that was that the local bookstore developed extra title or offered extra titles of those. And there were community members who came out in droves to speak both for challenging those titles, but largely against challenging or removing those titles. And there were community members who were reading from those titles aloud on Facebook Live, for example, as a way of personal protest against those challenges. I do think that when challenges like these arise, we do see the community that does not agree with that responding in this sort of renewed, invigorated interest in both libraries and library books. And I think one of the more important arguments that's being raised in challenge to the challenges is that in the Matsu anyway, every child is given a Chromebook device to use to support their work, their academic work. Of course, those Chromebooks have a firewall on them, but ask any secondary school student who may have tried, and there are ways to get around that firewall. Mm-hmm. So part of the conversation has to include all materials. It's interesting to me that there's so much focus on books right now and not on other technologies that deliver information and ideas.
All right, we are going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on challenges to book titles and different themes as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
In recognition of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Alaska Community Action on Toxics, with grant support from the Alaska Run for Women, present this health tip. When choosing personal care products, buy products with labels that disclose all ingredients to avoid possible exposure to harmful chemicals. Avoid products labeled with the word fragrance or parfum, which is used to hide many dangerous ingredients linked with cancer and reproductive harm. Learn more at akaction.org. This message sponsored by ACAT.
Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing challenges to books in both public and school libraries. And on the line from Homer is Dave Berry, who is the director of the Homer Public Library. And in the studio with me today is Janelle Gagnon, a former librarian with the Mat-Su Borough School District, and also has been a librarian in California and Oregon. Dave, I wanted to ask about you provide books, you said, to educate about transgender issues. You also feature books that are critical of being transgender. How are you deciding whose perspective to present?
Well, the selection process for controversial materials is the same as the selection process for all materials. We read the reviews. We do read reviews from across the political spectrum. And we always try to get a diverse array of viewpoints, so we're not just presenting one side of any issue. During the book challenge that we had about a year ago, there were 55 titles. Those were focused very heavily on the children's room and on the young adult collection. But we also have materials that talk about this in the regular adult nonfiction as well. And those, of course, tend to delve a whole lot deeper into the various issues.
So talk a little more about those, you know, trying to balance perspectives. Do you always try to present books on both sides of an issue? If you had accounts, if you had books on the pandemic or the 2020 election, would you look for titles that say the election was stolen or that ivermectin is a cure?
Well, we do have to ensure the accuracy of materials. So we do look for nonfiction materials that are peer-reviewed, if possible. A lot of them, of course, are not. But materials that are well-reviewed and well-regarded in the scientific and historical communities. But something to bear in mind when building the collection is that subjects which are controversial tend to be controversial precisely because there is not widespread agreement on what the truth actually is. So you have to be very careful to ensure that when you're looking for accuracy in the presentation of material, that you're not also screening out valid opinions that people may have. This is one reason why our political section, the 320s in the nonfiction area, is very heavily opinion-based. And I think that that's very important to preserve people's freedom of opinion as well as, but not their freedom to have individual facts.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Guy is in Valdez. Hello.
Hello. I wanted to talk about when in 400 AD, basically the Christians, the early Christians, end up taking over the religious aspects of the Roman Empire, and they end up burning all of the books. They threw the teachers out of the school that Plato had in Athens. They drove them out. They burned 97% of everything that the Romans and the Greeks wrote. They thought that the only book you needed to read was the Bible, and they plunged Europe into 1,200 years of the Dark Ages, and it didn't. They came out of it with the Enlightenment, and that was because of the Reformation with Luther and Calvin. And, you know, people don't know anything about history. You know, they don't know about, you know, Dalton Trumbull wrote Johnny's Got His Gun, and that was banned. You know, it came out after World War One. It got banned during World War Two. Got banned during the Korean War. It got banned during, and books can show you aspects of this world that you didn't realize happened. And history is one of the most important things that the library has to offer. And science, where we're going, what we know, and people that want to ban books, they just really don't understand the entire history of what can happen when you go to extremes with banning. And I'll let you guys talk. I've said enough. I don't think they should ban any books.
All right, Guy, thank you so much for the call. And your perspective here obviously feels very strongly about access, free access to reading materials. So, Dave, talk about the challenges. Why should people read banned books?
I think people should read everything. The more you read, the better off you are. But banned books in particular, the reason that they're banned is because they've managed to make a really strong connection with somebody. I mean, these are books that resonate with a certain readership that they feel very strongly about. The worst thing that can happen to a book, as far as its author is concerned, is for the book to just disappear. Really bad books just vanish. Nobody reads them. Nobody's interested. But books that are banned because they're important. And so if somebody has said to you, you shouldn't read this because it's terrible, because it's evil, whatever, I would strongly say that that's a clue that you should go and judge for yourself.
Janelle, your thoughts there?
I think reading banned books is an experience that can only build empathy and greater understanding. And I think that society in general can only benefit from more empathy and understanding. You know, at the same time, I think we have to have empathy for people who are expressing concerns. And I think Dave touched upon something really important that may be a byproduct of the pandemic and other things, but that there is maybe a feeling of a loss of control, and that this is one way of gaining some control. But, you know, in terms of reading banned books, Dave just also said something really important, and that was that books that aren't good quality books don't stay around. They don't get read. Certainly, when we're talking about child readers, it's good to have guidance. It's good to have adults in that child's life that take literature and its impact on a child seriously, and that they provide materials that are age appropriate. But of course, when we're talking about a whole school body, a student body, and the ideas and backgrounds that need to be expressed, there's going to be diversity there too. So, yeah, I would just go back to that idea of it, of reading banned books is going to help you to understand maybe ideas that you had not explored before and are going to help build empathy.
At the beginning of the show, I talked a little bit about some of the extreme examples, people, you know, quitting because of angry folks showing up at meetings armed and protesting or accusing them of terrible things. But Dave, you also had a positive thought about challenges. Tell us about that.
Well, like I said, it's been a chance for the community to really evaluate what its library should be. At the public library, as the face of the community, is a chance for the community to say, we want this to be what Homer is. everybody had a chance to speak up. There were thousands or hundreds at least of public comments that came in during the whole discussion process. Many people stayed at the Library Advisory Board meeting for 4 or 5 hours to get their chance to speak. And there was a lot of in-depth debate. And the 7 members of the Library Advisory Board actually sat down and read all 55 titles on the challenged list so that they would be in a position to make the most thorough and comprehensive decision. I think that going through that process has really given Homer the chance to talk about a lot of these issues that go beyond just what's in the book. They go to the heart of what Homer should be.
And Dave, you have said that everyone goes to the library. Do you think Homer is unusual in that respect, or is that pretty typical of small town libraries?
I think Homer is absolutely standard issue in that regard. Everybody in a small town always goes to the library. That's just where the heart of the town is. I remember reading an article, I wish I could remember where it was, that on the morning of September 11th, after U.S. airspace got shut down after the attacks, all these planes started arriving at a tiny little town in Labrador, I think it was. And the first thing everybody did when they got off the planes was go to the library because they wanted to see what the news was. They wanted someplace that was quiet to curl up in a chair for a while. They needed someplace to take their children to be entertained. And that's what libraries do. We are the heart of the community.
And it's a good place to have healthy, open, robust discussions and debates about books and democracy and the future of our country. So it is a good spot for people to gather and have those discussions and then check out some books and learn more. When my final question here in our last minute is, when someone says a book is banned, what does that really mean to you? There's not a national list of verboten books that are just like a blanket ban. America doesn't do that. Some other countries may. But all bans are just local libraries, correct? Or do some states actually have lists of banned books? Is that possible?
Not that I know of,
okay.
Dave.
So it's just library-based.
Yeah, I haven't heard
it's
of.
It's something that's kind of been up for debate at the moment, is on a statewide level, you know, are there books that we don't want any libraries to have? But I don't really think that that's going to happen because, as you said, America doesn't do that. For the most part, it has been individual communities trying to decide what their own individual libraries should be.
What do you both hope the future looks like in that regard? What do you want to see happen?
More of exercising the public process, but sticking to the policy and not skirting that policy and being very transparent with that.
Dave?
I want to see us sticking to our core values of serving everybody without distinction. And I want everybody in this community to feel they can come to the library and be welcome.
Ditto.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest today, Dave Berry, the director of the Homer Public Library, and Janelle Gagnon, who is a former librarian with the Mat-Su Borough School District. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones today, James Boatman and Tobin Shelby helped us out. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.